This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from beautiful Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, June is audiobook month, and so I am very happy that today I am talking to two people who have not only written their books, but they have also narrated their books. And it's always exciting to talk to people who have multiple talents. So at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Tembi Locke, who wrote a lovely and heartwarming book about her husband who passed away. And it's called From Scratch. And it's just a beautiful book. And I'm excited to talk to her. But right now, I'm going to boogie-woogie over and talk to somebody who I think is so delightful. And he's just an amazing talent, a songwriter who has written a book that will just touch your heart. And I am so happy and honored, really, to welcome to Joy on Paper, Lang Martin Jr. Hi.
Hey, Patsy, how are you? Well, I'm so happy to talk with you.
Well, you know, this is such an honor to talk to you because you are just so amazing. You know, not only are you just a fabulous, fabulous songwriter, and you inducted into the Nashville Hall of Fame, and you've written, I think something around 400 songs. But what I found most touching about your book is, and then when I listened to the audio, I thought, wow, what a sweet person. You're a sweetheart.
Well, you are too nice. I think that would be my favorite thing anyone would ever say.
Well, you know, I had read your book, and then I went to New York the other week, and as I'm going through the Lincoln Tunnel, I was thinking of you, because of course you're from New York. Although you don't sound like you're from New York, you're just so soft and so sweet. And I'm in the Lincoln Tunnel, and I'm thinking, I can see why Lang Martin did not want to live in the corporate world of New York City. I don't know how people can commute to work every day like that.
Well, it's really something, and everyone around me. We lived in Connecticut. Everyone around me took the train every day. That's after they drove 10 or 15 minutes to the train, and then they would walk or take the subway to their office, and then the same thing at night. So it was the only life that I knew growing up, and everybody literally that I knew who, you know, had children of that age, you know, raising their families, that's what they did.
And I was there for 4 days, and I met all these people who were doing that. They were taking some of them were taking two trains and then walking 14 blocks every day, day after day. And when I got up there, it's May, and the temperature was 54 degrees during the day. And and I thought, this is crazy. You know, I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and it's so beautiful. And, of course, you're in
Nashville. It is. I've been there, and it's a fantastic place.
Oh, it is. And, of course, in Nashville, it's a lovely place to live. My son went to Vanderbilt there, and just a different lifestyle.
Yeah, people really do have time for each other here. They're very motivated and inordinately successful in so many cases. But, boy, they have time for each other and for their families. And that was the thing that I craved. I wanted to go to my kids' baseball games and their, you know, plays and their teachers' conferences. And my dad was an incredibly great, motivated, fabulously smart guy. He really wasn't able to be part of the family. And I just thought, God, I love my kids. I love my wife. I want to be there and do this stuff together. So Nashville has offered that.
Well, I think your story is so inspiring because not only, you know, it's a story of great success and wonderful triumphs, but also a story of somebody who went through a lot. And I know that feeling of having a business. Well, I've had many businesses over the years. Some are successful, and then sometimes they fall apart, and it shatters your life for a while. But that's why I think this book is a really great book, and I hope people will really think about giving this book as a Father's Day gift, because it shows that how inspired a person can become to live the life that they want.
Oh, well, that's so nice of you to say that. Well, it's called Permission to Fly. The book is called Permission to Fly because really and truly that is what my mom gave me. She believed in venturing out and taking risks and then taking responsibility for what happened when you did take those risks. And when done at a young age, as she did it for me, it really, you know, prepares you for all the adjustments and resettings of the clock that you have to do as you're an older person. So I've just always thanked her for that, because starting with little tiny things that happen to a kid, you know, like, you know, you go over the handlebars of your bike, or in my case, you get a flat tire 10 miles from home, and all these little minor things, but you learn how to handle them, and then you get used to talking with people and realizing that if you have a problem, wherever you are, in most cases, there's someone who will help you, and you can't, you know, there's no point in being afraid. You just kind of wade in, you knock on a door, you flag somebody down, or, you know, whatever, that's kind of, people will help you. I think one of the key things that I learned by, you know, venturing out so young is that we all need each other so badly, and if we can describe to each other what we need, in most cases, people will help you, and that's—I mean, we don't have to do our lives alone. I guess that's the biggest thing I found out.
Well, you know, your life was, as you said, it was a very nice life, and you were, you know, headed perhaps into the corporate world. And when this whole feeling that you could write came upon you, that you could write a song, you know, that I think that is such a wonderful moment when somebody, it's sort of like what happened to me. I was reading books and books and books and collecting books, and I had 6,000 books, and I never knew what I was going to do with them. And then one day I just said, I want to do a radio program to help authors promote their books. It just happened like instantly. And
what a great calling that is.
And yeah, it really it was strange, you know, because nobody ever knew. People would say, well, why do you have all these books? Why are you reading all these books? And I had no plan. But when it just hit me that was the plan. And that's why I so enjoy, you know, talking to authors about their books and finding out why they took a certain course in life. What happened to them? You know, in your case, you were studying music, and you had problems with that.
Well, it was very strange. At Columbia University, where I went, a requirement was a music course. I couldn't grasp anything they were talking about. They would play these, you know, they would say, okay, this is, tell me when you hear a triad, and I had no idea what they were talking about. But it was so odd, because these economics and history majors, their hands would shoot up, and they'd say, that's triad, and, you know, I have no idea. I had to take an incomplete in the course. And I say in the book, I think the only reason I could get anywhere in music is I just loved it so much, and most of the songs that I love, Patsy, were, you know, A Whole Lot of Shaking and Hound Dog and these real simple songs. So I learned 3 or 4 chords on the guitar, and that was enough to play all these songs I loved. And most of the songs that I wrote that have made my living are really, really simple, using most of those simple chords.
Well, I mean, that's what's so great about Permission to Fly. It is a book, I think, that will inspire people, and people will say, well, you know, even if it's, for example, if somebody's already, you know, in the corporate world and their life is set, but they can look back and they can say, well, you know, maybe my kids will have this moment where they will want to do something that is different from what I planned for them. But look at what can happen. Look at what can they can accomplish if they just do what they really love. Oh. Okay. I was just talking about, you know, that I think why I think Permission to Fly is such a great book to give as a gift is that people can say, wow, we can grasp the thing that we love.
I really think so. And, you know, it's all in the price. I don't know if you found that, Patsy, but it's like if you're willing to pay the price, the price is always or usually very high and very new, because being rejected, being unemployed, being poor, whatever, is something that is what we've all tried to avoid. And yet, to get some of these things that we really want, we have to go through these unfamiliar and very painful things. But in so many ways, certainly in my case, it was the only way. I mean, I went from a pretty cushy, nice job on Madison Avenue on the 17th floor of this building to loading trucks at 12:30 at night with, you know, people who had loaded trucks their whole life. And so a completely different thing. But I knew that I was doing this because the thing I wanted most was only attainable by doing that. So because there's no, you can't have a demanding job and, you know, write songs and handle your family and everything. I had two little kids. So this truck loading job that I had, I was a Teamster, so I was a union member, and it paid really well compared to most other things. And I would be physically, you know, in great shape all the time, and I could just do it and turn it off and go to my songwriting. And but, you know, people would say, Lang, what are you doing? You're throwing your life away. And I said, but it's the only way to get what I want.
Well, it's funny. My dad was a Teamster, too. And as a matter of fact, that's how I got my name, Patsy with a Z.
Oh, my God.
Yes, because I used to sit on Jimmy Hoffa's knee when I was a baby, and he used to always say, Patsy.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
God, so, Patsy, I wrote a paper at college in Columbia about Jimmy Hoffa. I went down and interviewed people at Teamster headquarters because I just thought he was such an incredibly fascinating person and that his story was so amazing.
Well, he was amazing, and he used to give my father cigars, and my father didn't smoke except on New Year's Day. He would smoke one of Jimmy's cigars just because, you know, that was a special event for him. But, oh, I love Jimmy. And as a matter of fact, he used to always say, 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. If you don't give me a hug, I'm going to holler. And so
God.
I have lots of fond memories of him. Isn't
well,
it funny?
Boy, those characters. I mean, that was right in the era of the day that I went down to interview people at Teamster headquarters. Is the same day that I put in the book where this classmate of mine at Columbia who was on sabbatical was a CBS newsman, and he knew I loved JFK, and he said, how would you like to go into JFK's office? And I said, well, how's that possible? He said, well, I'm with CBS. I can probably work that out. And Patsy, I swear, no paperwork. I had no, you know, examination or looking through my I mean, we just walked in there. No kidding. That's how different the times were. That was, say, 62, 3 maybe.
Yeah, those were different days. Well, you know what? One of the, of course, the beautiful things in your book is that you had permission to fly also from your wife, because not every guy has a wife who says, "Go for it."
Absolutely. I mean, I've always said, and I tell her daily, that I would be a dust particle without her, because she just has so much courage. She has such fantastic judgment. I mean, after I failed in the restaurant and had to decide if I would go back into advertising, which I really wasn't suited for, I didn't really like it, or to go for songwriting where I'd had sort of modest success, but a little bit of encouragement, she just said, no choice, you've got to go to Nashville and try it, go for it as a songwriter. But honestly, most women would have opted for the safer route, and Linda's just got guts. But Linda was a fabric designer, Patsy. She had fabrics in every store, Bloomingdale's, everything in New York City that you could name. So she was a person who understood the artist mentality, which is that you're helpless. you're impassioned and you can't help yourself.
Well, she has been a blessing to you, and I and also an inspiration. And I Yeah, do you have your guitar with you?
Oh gosh, you know, Rick called me. I don't, because I went to a place where I know I can get 5 bars and we could hear each other. Which in my house, I have a wonderful house, but it doesn't have good bars, so I went to a good parking lot.
Well, I wanted you to play Rub It In. Sing it for me.
Oh, rub it in, rub it in. I feel the tingle begin. You're getting under my skin. Rub it in, rub it in.
Oh, I love that song. You know, being here in Clearwater, where people are like constantly on the beach, and I've been thinking, you know, I don't know if any, you know, of these companies that do this, all these suntan lotions have bought this song, but they should. I mean, it's perfect for suntan lotion. But
it is. You know, it ran for a long time for Plug It In. You know, the plug-in.
Yeah,
I was thrilled about that. And before that, it was a commercial for aspartame or aspergum or something
like
I
that.
I can't even remember how that used it, but the Plug It In people used it for 18 years, which was just a miracle. It was right with. Our kids were in college, so I needed every nickel that it was making.
Well, now, if the time's run out, they really should do it and make a beautiful commercial, wouldn't it? I can just imagine.
Oh, can you imagine?
Whoa.
Some adorable girl and some adorable guy.
Yeah, right here.
Oh,
and they can film it here on the beautiful beaches of Clearwater, Florida. It would, because it is a song, once you start singing it, it's just fantastic. I love it.
Oh, you're great. Well, you know, Patsy Linda was kind of responsible for that, too, because in our backyard in Connecticut, we were sitting and sunning with our friends, and somebody said, you know, can you put a little on my back and, you know, and rub it in? And I had my guitar there, and I just said, rub it in, rub it in. Linda said, you know, that sounds like a hit if that's not already a song. And I swear to God, I have no idea if I would have stuck with that had Linda not, you know, isolated that as a possible winner.
Well, she is fantastic. And I, you know, this is part of life, is that you have these wonderful people around you, and to just be able to have people who believe in you is so important.
Oh, it's everything. And, you know, Ray Stevens, who I'm going to see later today, was the person really who taught me and had faith in me and financially backed me when I just didn't have a dime and kept me from having to do something that it wasn't what I wanted. And without him believing in me, and, you know, he and Linda are the two key people in my adult life. And without them, I mean, I could just hang it up.
Well,
you can't do it alone.
Well, you know, since you don't have your guitar, I want to play something for you, just a little bit, and we'll talk about it.
Sure.
Isn't that wow? I love that song so much, and of course you wrote it, and it was Elvis's, you know, last hit, a last single that he recorded, and then of course the big hit that it was. I love that song.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, it's so incredible because I idolized Elvis my whole life growing up. I took pictures of him to school and, you know, said this is definitely the coolest guy I've ever seen in my whole life. And then I sent him so many songs, Patsy. I 20 or 25. Everybody had an address where they would send their songs for Elvis. But as I said in the book, a man one day who had a direct line to Elvis just sat down next to me one day when I was pitching songs, and he was pitching songs. We were waiting to play our songs for somebody. And he just said, Lang, do you have anything for Elvis? Because if you do, bring it to my office today at 3 o'clock or whatever. And I said, I do. And I went and got a disc made. Elvis would listen on a disc, and you couldn't just play a tape or something. So I got this disc cut, and I took it over there. And to make a really long story short, he ended up recording it only because this man did me this gigantic favor. You know, one more thing. Of example of people helping each other.
Well, it is. I think it is such a phenomenal song. And when you heard it the first time, because you know, it's too bad that they didn't invite you there for the recording, because it must have been an exciting moment. Were you as amazed as everyone when J.D. Sumner his part?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, who could ever believe a human being could do that? You know, but I read the last couple of days there was some gospel song that he recorded, you know, many years before Way Down that had a note similar to that. So he has twice nailed apparently the lowest note sung by a human being in the Guinness Book of World Records. Apparently,
I never
met him.
You didn't, because it is amazing that the way he sings that, it's the three octaves below middle C, which is phenomenal. And I love that song.
Well, thank you. You're so sweet to say that. I just couldn't believe that this guy that I grew up listening to ever recorded a song of mine that just seemed totally impossible. And you're right. It is literally the last new song that he ever recorded.
Wow, what a loss to the world! I just even now, I don't think there's no one can ever replace him. And you know, you are such an artist with the way that you're able to go from different styles, you know, rock and you know, just it's amazing. I wonder, you know, what's in that head of yours? There's so much music.
Oh, you're nice. Well, you know. It definitely helps to be eaten up with it. Obviously, you're eaten up with what you're doing, or you couldn't possibly be so successful. And it really helps. It gives you a little afterburner, a little extra rocket fuel if you just love it. It's just like loving a person. You know, you'll do anything for that person, even what might seem totally unreasonable to someone else, but it has nothing you're crazy about. And that's what happens when you're just bonkers over your job. You don't really think about it. You just plow in and do it. And it's possible that something wonderful might happen with this little extra energy and affection that you have for it.
And you've worked with so many just absolutely fabulous people, and so many people have done your music in ways that are, you know, it takes your breath away sometimes when you listen to, like, Reba McEntire singing The Greatest Man I Never Knew. There's so much, it comes from you, you know, this feeling within you that you're able to give to the singers, so that it's so, you know, you listen to it and you say, wow, those are somebody else's words coming through her heart, and it's beautiful.
Well, thank you. I wrote that with Richard Lee, who is an amazing songwriter. You may know him. He wrote Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue and a bunch of other things. He wrote Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue by himself. And during whatever, 20 years into my career, I was really putting myself to sleep with my own guitar and my own voice, my own thoughts. And I called Richard one day, and I asked him if he would write with me. And I went over there, and we were sitting in a new house he had just bought. It had no furniture except a little card table and stuff. And we were sitting there. It was winter. It was cold. And I said, hey, you got any great ideas? And Richard thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. You know, feel like I come in and I'm going to milk him for great ideas. And anyway, he said, I have this thought. What do you think? And he played The Greatest Man I Never Knew. He just put, I have this idea, this is The Greatest Man I Never Knew. What do you think? And I said, well, you know, The Greatest Man I Never Knew lived right down the hall from me. And I knew that Richard's dad had died when he was 2, that he literally never knew his dad. And I really didn't know my dad so well because, you know, he was kind of working a lot, and he was from a different generation that was less discoursive and ready to just spit it out like you and I are.
Well, you know, I wish I had booked you for the entire hour. This book, you know, I books come out and you want to promote them at the time. But I would like to invite you back. And we can arrange a time and a place where you're going to have your guitar so you can play a little bit for us. And,
sure.
And so we'll come, because the more you promote a book, you know, the better the sales. That's you just have, that's what you learn in this book world. You have to do it often. You can't just have like one book release and talk about it one time. That's what I like to do. I like to bring authors back 6 months later and say, let's talk about the book again, because I want people, you know, at Christmas time, I want people to be buying this book. So we'll have you back, okay?
God, you're too good. Well, you're right. I mean, Permission to Fly being dished out by a parent does fit for Father's Day, and I would sure love it if they would do that. And Patsy, I will come back on your show anytime, any season, anywhere you want.
Okay. Well, we'll arrange it, and perhaps you can even bring Ray Stevens. We'll have an entire hour, and you can sing and talk about everything, and we'll promote the book, because I think it's an inspirational book. And as I said, I want everybody to get it for Father's Day, and then we're gonna talk about it at other times of the year too, because you and your wife and your entire life is an inspiration to everyone.
Well, thank you so much, Patsy, and I greatly appreciate your having me on today. It's a great pleasure for me.
Okay, well, I'll be in contact, okay? Bye-bye now.
You take care of yourself.
I will. Thank you so much. Bye, Lang.
Thanks, Patsy. Bye.
Wow. Oh. Wow. I can boogie-woogie with that. There are so many wonderful songs that he's written, and we're going to have him back. And, I just love him. Now, in a little while, I'm going to be talking to Tembi Locke, and you've seen her on television shows. I think she's been on, you know, like 900 television shows, NCIS Los Angeles, and many others. And so I'm just waiting for her to call in, and I'm really thrilled about talking to her, because recently I had, you know, I like to bring authors on who have overcome struggles in their lives, who have, you know, met challenges and overcome them. And so I'm really thrilled when I have somebody like Tembi Locke on, whose life, you know, you think somebody's life is just perfect and great, and then a tragedy comes into their life. So I'm just, you know, happy that she's going to be on in a little while. Okay, and what else? Let's take a quick commercial.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, course, it's Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Tembi Locke, whose book, From Scratch, is an absolutely beautiful and heartwarming book, and I am so thrilled to have Tembi on with me today. Hi, Tembi.
Hello, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, it's so great to talk to you. You know, you have one of those smiles that's like when they talk about a $1 million smile or a killer smile, you've got it. You are just so beautiful and it's so wonderful. I was looking at your website and I want to tell everybody, you know, because always, you know, what happens, I talk to somebody and I get so excited and we run out of time at the end. And I just want to tell people right from the beginning, they have to go to your website because Tembi Locke, and it's a lovely name, T-E-M-B-I, Tembi Locke, has a gorgeous website. And you can see all these pictures, this $1 million smile of yours. And I think it probably is because, you know, you're doing
well. Thank you. I would say thank you to my parents because I take no credit for it. and my orthodontist when I was a kid.
Well, did a great job. And this is so exciting. You have, you know, it's always wonderful to talk to somebody who's, you know, I love to talk to people who have written books about their lives and share, you know, their journey. And one of the things that I want to mention that this book, From Scratch, is, of course, a Reese Witherspoon Hello Sunshine Book Club pick. But you have done, of course, the book and the Audible version. And
yes.
The Audible version, you know, Audible books are, June is Audible Book Month, and they are getting more and more popular. And I want to say that your particular, the way you tell the story, and it's so many places are heartbreaking, but you just tell it with such passion. It's a wonderful, wonderful Audible book.
Thank you, Patsy. I had such a pleasure. You know, it was an honor actually to read it and to do the audiobook because, you know, one, it was sitting down with my story cover to cover, right? In this sort of, in a very direct and intimate way. And I, you know, each day when I went into the recording booth to record it, I thought, how do I do this? And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to tell the story like I'm telling it to a close friend. And that became the way that I moved through all of it, the joys, the difficulties, the pain, the parts where I laughed out loud, the delicious food. It just became kind of like, you know, a conversation with a friend. So I hope that comes through. And in fact, that's what I'm beginning to sort of gather from all the shares, people, and comments that people are sharing, you know, via email and on social media, that they are just sitting with this story and, you know, in their driveways, in their kitchen, while they're cooking, you know, in their car, on the way to, you know, a vacation, on the airplane. So it's just remarkable, and I feel so much gratitude.
You accomplished it because we really do feel like we're with you. And there are times, you know, I was crying. I think of some of the parts, and I get tears in my eyes because you did such a beautiful job, first in writing the book and sharing your story, and we'll tell everybody about it, but in the recording, it just comes across, and it's so heartfelt, and it's so emotional, and it's a recording that I hope everybody will listen to, because it really, tell the story of what happened to you, of this love story. It's because it is essentially a love story and also a story of overcoming the greatest tragedy.
Yeah, well, you know, the book is it's, you know, at its essence, it's a cross-cultural love story, and it's set largely in Sicily, the lush, you know, sort of backdrop of Sicily, and it traces how I met my Italian chef husband. I bumped into him on the streets of Florence when I was, you know, a college co-ed. And my life changed from this, you know, sort of fated, destined, if you will, chance meeting. And it traces how we navigated our relationship from, you know, its inception through marriage, through all the ups and downs that life gave us, which included you know, parenthood, a diagnosis, illness, distance and fracture with family at a time, the ways in which we had to overcome so many things. And then, of course, his passing, his loss, and the ways in which I travel with our daughter, who was 7 when her dad passed, to Sicily that first summer to try to forge a new relationship with my mother-in-law. So the book is also about this sort of triad of a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter, all navigating this new relationship when the person who connected us was no longer with us, my husband. And the way we do that in Sicily, and there's food, of course, you know, you're in Italy, and my, you know, Sicilian mother-in-law who's cooking all this great food. And the book, you know, so it is truly, as you just said, it's a love story, but a love story in all the forms of love, the kind of romantic love to the love of family, to the love to motherhood love, to even love of place, to love of the idea of travel and journey, and to some degree, you know, kind of love making peace and finding love in our darkest times, even through the things that are the most painful, finding a sliver of light and the connection to love through that. So the book is all of that. And there's recipes.
I was going to say, and the recipes. And that's also on your website. That's one of the reasons I want to send people over to your website. But, you know, having been to Sicily, which is beautiful, I still remember arriving in Palermo. And it's funny, you know, it's a different place. You know, you're in Italy. And then you fly into Palermo, and suddenly everything seems to change. There's a different atmosphere there. It's absolutely beautiful. But I can see that, you know, even, you know, in the years I was there, they might not be even that welcoming to, you know, to a blonde American girl to get involved with one of their handsome guys.
Oh yeah, no, I'm getting letters from people that are like, no, you know, we, you know, I'm American, and you know, I'm, you know, of Scottish descent, and my, you know, my Sicilian in-laws didn't go, you know, didn't initially approve.
Oh yeah, I mean, it really had. I mean, there's all being, of course, a black American, you know, which is
an added layer,
perhaps, but they weren't all that welcoming, I can tell you.
No, yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about being historically, right, and I do try to share with this in the book, is that historically, you know, Sicily is a complex island, meaning that it sits right in the middle of the Mediterranean. It's been conquered over thousands of years by so many different cultures. You know, so it has North African influence, Arabic influence, Norman influence, Spanish influence. It is over the centuries, kind of like the epicenter of, you know, most of humanity has sort of passed through there at some warmer fashion, and as a result of a place that was conquered so frequently, they can be a little like, who are you? Who are the outsiders coming in, right? And they are islanders. They live on an island. So there's that part. So I think in the book, it's very interesting, you know, that for me as an American, you know, trying to find my way in a place that wouldn't be sort of welcoming, even if other people from other parts of Italy, yeah. Let alone from someone from America, you know.
And from Houston, Texan.
Right, and from Houston, right? But, and as an actress, it's like, wait, who are you? But then the other piece in it that I think is so beautiful is the way that, you know, that might be the initial thing, but if you hang in there, oh my gosh, when Sicilians open their door and heart to you, you're in. And you are with them and a part of them for life. And there's a connection that they don't let go of. And that's also a part of the story, right, is that way in which, you know, not taking things at first glance, being willing in life to sort of move through what might be our external differences or the, you know, sort of the ways in which we are divided by geography or language. But that if we move through that, the ways in which we see we're all way more connected than we could ever imagine. And in my case, I do that through a family story.
Well, tell us about your husband. Let's talk about him, because it's so such a beautiful love story. You bump into each other over gelato, which is always fun.
Yes. So Sada was just, he was an extraordinary person in the ways in which he really knew how to love and was connected to his heart. He was a very heart-centered person, and a very, a down-to-earth, unassuming. I mean, the funny thing that I think sometimes is he would probably just find it so odd that people are talking about him, because he was really an unassuming, low-key guy, but he had this depth of heart connection that was undeniable. And for me, being 20 and meeting him, he really inducted me into the possibility of what our love and relationship could be. And he, you know, really, and I write about it in the book, that first chapter when he cooks this meal for me in his restaurant, was really sort of saying, this is who I am. And he did that through food. Like, he, you know, he doled out and served, you know, at the restaurant, like, all these dishes. I won't give that whole
book
away, but, right? But there's this way in which he was communicating to me through food and also telling me who he was. You know, the ways in which he was steadfast, the ways in which he, you know, was committed, willing to show up, that he was unafraid, he could be authentic and vulnerable. All of that came through, and it was very intoxicating. And, you know, I was 21 years old, and I certainly didn't go to Florence thinking I would meet someone and marry them. You know, I was there to study art history and come back home, you know, and graduate. But he really, I credit him so much with holding a space, you know, that term that everyone uses now, which I love so much, because it's sort of when someone says, I see what's happening here, and I'm willing to wait until you can see it. And he did that, you know, until it was undeniable that this was the man that I was meant to spend my life with, and that my life would be richer for taking the leap across our ages, the language, our cultures, our, you know, nationalities, and be willing to try. And boy, what has my life, did he change my life. And it is that love, right, that I also didn't want to let go of after his passing. And so the book, writing the book, was also, I can see now, a way in which I could, in my grief, connect back to him and could keep a part of him alive for myself, but also for our daughter, because the book is also a love letter to her about her parents, about a time in her life, the first 7 years of her life, and what she had to go through, you know, and the ways in which it shaped all of us. So yeah, he is just, you know, extraordinary. And the beautiful thing now is having people say his name to me. I mean, what a gift. What a gift. And smile when they talk about him. It's just beautiful. So, yes, thank you for asking. I do enjoy talking about him, and I hope he's smiling.
Well, I'm sure he is. And, of course, as you said, he brought food into your life in a way that is, of course, so, well, it's sensual, too. Food can be so sensual. But it's a lifelong thing with you now, the feeling of what food can bring, how it can join people together, the importance of real products, and, you know, a few Thanksgivings ago. I want to tell you a funny story.
Please.
No, I'll tell you a funny story because it relates to a few Thanksgivings ago. I bought, because thinking everybody should have a salad at Thanksgiving, I bought 3 tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, by time you get to Thanksgiving dinner, you really don't care about a salad. You want the turkey and the stuffing. Who cares about? And I put them on the counter. I put them on the counter, and I forgot about them. And I mean, I literally forgot about them. They were in a bowl, and they looked pretty. And I realized a month later they're still there, and they still look just as pretty. And I was so glad we never ate them. And I'm thinking, what in the world was in those tomatoes?
Yeah.
And then when you think of Sicily and you think of what they can do with food and what the...
Let me tell you, the first time, and by the way, the story I'm about to tell you is a testimonial that can be echoed by thousands, if not millions of people who've ever tasted a Sicilian tomato. There is something, like, I thought I'd had tomatoes. I thought I kind of knew, like, what a tomato was. You know, I was like, okay. When I tasted it, it literally stopped me cold, because I thought, what the heck have I been eating my whole life?
Exactly.
That called itself a tomato that was charading, masquerading as a tomato, because this, what I'm tasting now, and that's the beauty of that island, and I try to share that in the book, and the ways in which the immediacy of food and the fact that people eat, you know, seasonally, the fact that because you eat seasonally, you're also going to be very inventive with the ways that the you know, sort of, it feels like thousands of ways that they can do things they can do with one dish, right? One ingredient. But that creativity becomes a way of life. It becomes a way of engaging with the plate. It becomes a kind of way of saying, what can we do? How do we bring the flavor profile fresh to the plate every day? Because guess what? All we're eating is tomatoes, you know, from like, you know, June through the end of September. So how are we going to make them really great? So that's one of the things that I really learned as my life, you know, as a chef's wife, but also, you know, my time in Sicily really taught me to appreciate the seasonality of things, right? So I tend to not, as you, like you said, you know, get a tomato in November for Thanksgiving because I'm like, well, one, it's not going to taste great, and two, what have they put in it?
I mean, that it would last for a month. And I did at that time. I thought, I remembered Sicily because I mean, I remember just going to the market and buying tomatoes and, you know, taking them out on for a picnic and just, you could just, they just, I don't know, they ate them and they were sort of like, it was, talk about heavenly food, Sicilian tomato.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you feel like you're like, you know, on some Epicurean journey, you know, and it's not that, you know, meaning that especially if you eat locally and fresh, I mean, you know, sure, everyone can go any place in the world and have a bad, you know, tourist experience. So you have to sort of, but if you eat the way locals eat, which is generally what, you know, I think as travelers is a great rule of thumb in general, that becomes a way that you're like, oh, this is gorgeous. And then also there's something about the conversation that happens over food. So at the one level, yes, it's actually what are the ingredients in front of you and how are they prepared. But then the second piece is the way in which food sits at the center of your life in terms of conversation, in terms of a space, almost a sacred space to gather, to discuss, to grow, to learn more about other people, to sort of rehash your day, to sort of, you know, ignite your dreams. You can do all of that around a table and around sharing a meal with someone. And there's that way that food can, you know, ignite your life. And that's what I found. That's what Sara taught me, and that's what I try to share in the book.
And you do. I think that comes across. And I think anyone who gets this book will be inspired to look at food differently. Well, first of all, of course, they'll be inspired by your story and your strength and your love. But also the food aspect, I think, is important because it's almost like a calming effect. Calm down. Enjoy life while you have it. Don't take anything for granted. It's here. Your tomatoes, your really great tomatoes here today, just savor it. You have a wonderful husband. Savor him. You know, just enjoy everything in the moment. So that you do have wonderful memories later on.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And it's true. I have had a few people tell me this book is making me hug my husband closer. I've had husbands write and say it's closer.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And that's the power of this book. And it's called From Scratch, and it's by Tembi Locke. I love your name. You know, my name is Patsy with a Z, and you have Tembi. Your real name, is it an African name?
It's an African name. It's South African. My full name is Tembi Kili, but everybody calls me Tembi. You know, I was named by the South African folk singer Miriam Makeba, and it means one who's trustworthy.
That's what I wanted to ask, what it meant, because it's a beautiful name. Tembi Kili is a beautiful name. Of course, I was telling before we got on, I'm telling people that they can see you all over television. I don't know, you've been on so many television shows, and whenever you are on, they'll recognize you by your killer smile. It's just, it's a beautiful smile.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you for directing people to the website, because that way you can also become a subscriber. I send out once a month. I don't inundate people, but just kind of updates and links to sort of, you know, what they can see and what I've been up to, and it's a fun way to engage.
I think it's a great website. I want people to go there because you talk about taking a trip to Sicily, and everybody, really, if you're looking for a place, just something different. Sicily is a wonderful destination for a relaxing vacation, for a vacation full of food. because you will eat like crazy. And just in just to relax, just to set back
just
and,
relax,
and just enjoy it. I'm so happy that you have now this relationship with your mother-in-law and your family in Italy. And
thank you.
Do your parents come over there too from Houston? And
They have, and it's so funny watching my dad. You know, my parents, you know, grew up in East Texas, so you know, they live in Houston, and sort of seeing, you know, my dad in his cowboy boots walking down this like Sicilian village, you know,
is
like just the joy of joys for me, because that is a part of the story. It's that cross-cultural piece, right? And the ways in which he finds himself, he finds that small town not dissimilar from his East Texas roots. In that it's a small community, it's an agrarian way of life. People know each other. They're very friendly and open. And he's like, wow, this feels like Marshall, Texas. Like, Dad, that is hilarious, right? So that's the other part of the story, is that I think, hope readers or listeners.
And I think they will get it. They will get it from this book that I think is just wonderful. And I am just so grateful that you came on today, Tempe, and I want people
thank you for having me
to tell you go to her website, and the book is available from scratch wherever books are sold,
and you can download it through Amazon or through Simon Schuster or any of your booksellers,
and Audible books the audio version is I have a feeling you're going to win an award for that one, because you've done a beautiful job.
Okay, thank you so much.
Well,
thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye. Wow. What a story. Oh, you really do cry when you listen to her Audible version. It was, even now that I think about parts of it, it's she does a beautiful job. And you can just watch for her. It's a name, as I said, she's been on every television show that you can think of. And I hope that... you know, somebody should pick her up and keep her as a regular on one of these shows, because she's been on so many and she's always delightful. And so, again, June is Audible Book Month. If you haven't tried an Audible book, I don't know what's wrong with you, because they are really wonderful to have, and you can listen to them any place. And I find them very relaxing just before you go to sleep. It's just a lot of fun. Remember, you know what I always tell you. You have to start writing. If you haven't started writing, then start a page a day. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're really lucky, to hear those words lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a film, a streaming video, or a television series. You never know, but you've got to start writing. And I hope that you've been inspired today by these two authors that I've had on today, Tembi Locke and Lang Martin Jr. They've written the stories of their life, and you can do the same thing, and you can be an inspiration for people. And I want to again thank everybody who came on. And I had a wonderful author, Jerry Padovano, on just a few weeks ago, and he was talking about his The Ultimate Challenge, Surviving Cancer. So you can write your story. You have a family story. You have somebody in your family you want to write about, something that you've done. You never, there's always something out there that you can write about. So all you have to do is start writing a page a day. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything. And bye-bye now, everybody.